There we go. Now we are. Okay. Thank you. I was not on at first when I come up here, so I wanted to make sure. Yeah, we're going to try to finish up this lesson. And then if you didn't pick it up, there is paperwork back there. Justice and righteousness, true justice and righteousness. And that'll cover the rest of 16 through chapter 21 or part of 21. That's where we're headed anyway. We're going to be moving kind of rapidly. Through these next sections anyway. We'll slow down a little bit toward the end. But basically, and this is the way Moses is doing it. He's just giving a summary of some things that are just to remind them of what was told to them in Leviticus and Numbers, in Exodus 2, so that they understand what the meaning of the law was and how they should execute those things in their journeys. In their daily living, and in their approach to their neighbors and the people they live around. We've been trying to give it, a pretty good synopsis of that each week, and we appreciate your help. We've got questions. We'll finish up tonight with our questions. I think we'll start with question 10, if you want to look those over here in just a minute. But we're going to start. I had marked that we had finished some of this, but I'm going to go back over a few things just to give you a reminder of a couple of things that, I had, when I go back and study, I go back and study the whole thing. A couple of things I forgot to tell you, so I want to just a reminder or just a reference for you to, you can write in your notes or whatever. But we're glad everybody's here. I'm glad you're here to study together, to honor God. Appreciate everybody's presence. We'll have some updates later on news for our people. For those of you who don't know, Tommy Glenn Clark did pass away last Sunday. There's going to be a visitation at DeVars Friday afternoon. I think it's from 1 to 3. You should have got a blast on that. And so, just so you know, her funeral will be, I think it's in Ozuna. It's a family, private family affair. So, but the visitation will be on Friday afternoon. Let's go ahead and, if you will, bow with me. We'll have a word of prayer. Our dearest God and Father in heaven, we're so thankful unto you, Father, for all your blessings, for everything you do. We're grateful, Father, for life and health and strength. Thankful for home and our families. And we're thankful, Father, for our church family, that we can gather together to look into your word together, to learn from it, to study with it, to study it, to learn from it, to gain good, to hopefully increase our faith. And Father, as we mentioned before, this study should help us get to know you better, to understand your will. Help us to understand what you wanted the children of Israel to do, but more importantly, Father, what you want us to do. We pray, Father, that as we learn, we will be able to do what you asked them to do, and that is to teach it to others. Forgive us, Father, where we fail you. Continue to bless us. Keep us all, each home and each family represented tonight safe. We pray in the name of Christ. Amen. We're going to be looking at basically the second page of the verbiage there. It starts out with holiness in mourning and in eating. But we're going to talk, if we go back into that, if we look into that closely, it reminds me, and I just wanted to mention this because we talked about that. Talked about what was holy about life and what was unholy about death. We talked about they were not to eat the blood because in there was the life. And different things like that. So, but to me, it was talking about what you eat and what you drink, unclean and unclean. Kind of reminds me of Paul wrote in Romans chapter 14. The way the new covenant take on that is, because we know in Acts 10 with the Cornelius, when God told Peter, rise, kill, and eat, there was unclean animals on there, and Peter said, no, I can't do that. But God was saying, yes, you can. So we're looking at the differences from the old law or to the old covenant to the new covenant, that things you couldn't do under the old covenant, you can do under the new covenant, and that you actually should be doing under the new covenant. But that reminds me, again, like I say, it reminded me of the thoughts that Paul presented in Romans 14, whereas if it causes someone to stumble, I will not eat meat. So, and that was part of that. That was part of that teaching of clean and unclean animals, things sacrificed to idols, meat that was offered on an altar that would go into the marketplace and be for sale for Christians to buy. Some people couldn't do that for conscience sake. And that's what Romans 14 was talking about. But it all stems back to these thoughts here that we presented with the law on what you can eat, clean and unclean animals. So I just wanted to mention that. We talked a little bit about tithing. I think we did anyway. But, you know, basically one of the things we needed to point out, there should be joy in tithing. In other words, it should be a joyous occasion to be able to give back because of what God had purposed for it. It was to do a lot of different things. It actually was not a part, remember this, it was not a part, tithing was not something that was new to the Ten Commandments. It's not a part of the Ten Commandments. Was it? It wasn't one of the ten. But it was a part of their honoring people. You remember Moses, of course you should know this from the study in Hebrews, Moses gave tithes to who? Melchizedek. Not Moses, Abraham, which was before Moses. So tithes were a way to show honor or to show respect, basically like a gift. In this case, though, it was commanded by God for a certain purposes. One was to help the poor. One was to feed the Levitical priesthood, the tribe of Levi, because they had no ground to till. They had no way to grow their food or do anything like that because they had other purposes. And part of that was that was why you tithe, so you could do that for others. Another thing he talked about in chapter 15, those verses there, in chapter 15 of Deuteronomy, he talked about, again, reminds them, he redeemed them out of slavery, out of the slavery of Egypt. He called it out of the furnace. If you remember, that was one of the expressions. And he just reminds them of how important that was for them. And then I got a question for you. One of the things I wrote in here is this. Do they ever go back into slavery? Do the children of Israel ever go back into slavery? Do they ever? That's their history. When they broke the covenant with God, when they continually disobeyed him and went after other gods, he allowed all these. The Babylonians was one of the biggest conquests. But who took over the Babylonians? The Assyrians did. And in the New Testament, who were they slaves to? Who were they under the rule of? The Romans. So, yeah, they went back into slavery. In their mind, they didn't. But that's just how far away from God they had gotten. And I think I can't remember now the passage, but in the passage in the New Testament where it says, things remain the same as they were for our fathers. You know, we come out of slavery and we've never been back in slavery. But that was just so far from the truth because that was their mindset. They still thought they were God's chosen people and they hadn't broken the covenant, but they had. And God had let them be taken over by other countries. The idea of that slavery, and he didn't want them to be slaves again, but they did it because of that. When he mentions in verse 11, look at chapter 15 in verse 11. Because this was part of the stuff he was wanting to go over. We'll start in verse 10. It says, thou shalt surely give him, and thy heart shall not be grieved when thou givest unto him, because this is for this thing Jehovah thy God will bless thee in all the work, and now that thou puttest thy hand into. For the poor will never cease out of the land. Therefore I command thee, saying, thou shalt surely open thy hand unto thy brother, to thy needy and to thy poor in thy land. So he's talking about what he needs to do. You know, as far as the poor people go. But what did Jesus, you remember what Jesus said in Matthew 6? He said the same thing. You will always have the poor with you, right? Matthew 6 and 12. You reference that. That's one of the things Jesus said. The idea that the forgiveness of debt is a part of the feast that he talks about there, in one of the feasts anyway. But the idea of the fact that in let's see what verse it is. He gives the difference about the difference what they had, talking about in verse 15 there in chapter 15. He says, and thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in the land of Egypt, and Jehovah thy God redeemed thee. Therefore I command thee this thing today. And it shall be if he say unto thee, I will not go out from thee, because he loveth thee and thy house, because he is well with thee. Then thou shalt take an awl and thrust it through his ear into the door, and he shall be thy servant forever. And also thy maidservant thou shalt do likewise. Talking about what they have to do to maintain the idea of, I call it slavery, or free people, or debtors, what they can do to those to make sure that the debt's paid. But they still were to give to the poor. That was one of the main things that he was talking about, because that's what the tithes were about. When we look at chapter 16 and talks about the three feasts, talks about, what were they? You remember what the three feasts were? Okay. What about, what's the two things he says, or what's the one thing he says about both the Passover and the Feast of Weeks? What does it remind them of? What does he remind them of when he talks about those? Yeah, they were. He talks about what that were happening in Egypt. You know, if we kept a count, I didn't intend it for anybody. I'll ask the question sometimes. How many times did he remind them that they were slaves in Egypt? You know, we couldn't. I don't know if anybody could count that. You know, that would just be rhetorical to ask that, so to speak, because he reminds them of that all the time. But part of the process of setting up these feast days was for God to remind Israel where they had come from, why he had redeemed them, and what they could look forward to. And now he reminds them again, as they're fixing to go into this land of promise, that, you know, we call it the Feast of Passover, which we all know about, a lot about that. We have more, know more about that. But the Feast of Weeks, what was that about? You remember? What was the Feast of Weeks about? You remember? More details, like I said, back over in the other studies. But the idea is the fact that the Feast of Weeks was there to remind them that they were slaves before. And so now they're going to go in and conquer, so they're going to make slaves out of some of the people that they could conquer too. So remember, that just reminds them of that. The Feast of Tabernacles, that was also called the Feast of Booths, or Tabernacles, or Tents. And it just some reminders of when their exodus, where were they traveling in when they exited, when they came out of Egypt? They were traveling in tents, weren't they? It's just a reminder of all those things. Why does Moses mention them here? I don't know. But again, it goes back to the thought that he's constantly reminding them of what God has done for them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt, when he rescued them or redeemed them, so that they could enjoy the promised land the way he wanted them to and the way they needed to, because it was their promise, that promise they had given to Abraham. Let's look at some verses here. Turn over to chapter. I know we've covered just part of the time. Part of obeying God, Moses mentions the fact that he wants them to enjoy obeying God. It mentions the same, the phrase, so that it may go well with you. Let's look at we'll just do a quick summary. I'm not going to list every one of them because there's about 10 or 12. Turn over to chapter 5 of Deuteronomy. I know it's not in this lesson particularly, but it is part of it. We'll get to some of the verses here. But in chapter 5, sorry. Verse 16, when he talks about honoring thy father and mother, as part of the Ten Commandments, it says, honor thy father and thy mother as Jehovah thy God commanded thee, that thy days may be long, that may go well with thee in the land which Jehovah thy God is giving thee. Look at verse 29. Oh, that there were such a heart in them that they would fear me, and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. Again, in verse 33, there in chapter 5. You shall walk in all the way which Jehovah your God hath commanded you, that you may live, that it may be well with you, that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. That's just a sample of it. Here in our study, chapter 12, chapter 12, verse 25, thou shalt not eat it, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee, when thou shalt do what is right in the eyes of Jehovah. Also again, like I say, verse 28, observe and hear all these things which I command thee, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee forever, when thou doest that which is good and right in the eyes of Jehovah thy God. I'm going to stop with just those because you get the picture. The connection here is with what? It's going to be well with them if they do what? If they obey him, right? If they follow the commandments. If they do what he says to do, it's going to be well with them. It's going to do good for them. That doesn't mean everything's going to be perfect. That doesn't mean, there's an easy button for them. There's nothing going to have to, they're not going to be challenged at all. But it just means that if they obey God, he's going to take care of them. And like I say, it doesn't mean they're going to live a sinless life. It doesn't mean that, nothing can ever happen to them. It's just the fact that God says obedience is important. And if you want things to be good for you, then you're going to obey me. But that should bring joy to be well with you. If it's going to be good for you, it should bring joy to you. And that's what he's emphasizing. Look at in chapter 12, let's see, verse 7. That's the one, I think. We're going to find out. When he's talking about they're going to worship and they're going to eat in the place that God chooses, we mentioned that last week, there was going to be Jerusalem where God was going to choose to house the temple. In verse 7, it says, and there ye shall eat before Jehovah your God, and ye shall rejoice in all that you put in your hand unto ye and your household, when Jehovah thy God hath blessed thee. You shall not do after all the things that we do here this day, every man whatever is right in his own eyes, but you are not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance which Jehovah thy God gives to you. But he's talking about you should be able to do this, and you should be able to do it with joy. Again, in verse 12, and you shall rejoice before Jehovah your God, ye and your sons and your daughters and your men servants and your maid servants, and the Levite that is within your gates, for as he hath no portion nor inheritance with you. So he's talking about when in other words, they're to rejoice when they eat, when they worship, when they go before Jehovah, with everyone around them. We mentioned that so that we can remember to rejoice in our worship too, where God tells us to do. We could look at Philippians chapter 2. Let's turn over there in the New Testament. Philippians chapter 2. The idea of joy in what we do. Philippians 2. Starting in verse 12. So then, my beloved, even as ye have also obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who worketh in you, both to will and to do, for his good pleasure. Do all things without murmuring and questionings, that ye may become blameless and harmless, children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you are seen as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may have whereof to glory in the day of Christ, that I do not run in vain, neither labor in vain. And continues, says, yea, and if I am offered upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I joy and rejoice with you all, and in the same manner do you also joy and rejoice with me. Just as we serve God together, we should have joy. That's the efforts. And it did begin just in the New Testament. It was part of the Old Testament too, that God wanted the children of Israel to do. When God told Moses told the children of Israel that God was going to choose a place for them, to worship him. He didn't reveal it to them at this point because they still had a lot of work to do, didn't they? They still had a lot of things to do. He talks about it, the place where they were going to eat, the place where they were going to worship, the place where there was going to have a name, the place where the temple was going to be built. Of course, they didn't know that at the time. And it was going to be built by Solomon. When he talks about those things in the Kings, he realizes that they're not going to serve him the way he wanted them to. And what does he do? He abandons them. They break the covenant, so God abandons them. We don't have time. We're not going to take the time anyway to go into it. Well, let's go ahead and let's look at 1 Kings. I think that's probably the best one. 1 Kings chapter 14. We'll just read a verse there. Maybe another verse in 2 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 14. This is talking about the things that they should not have done that he has warned them about. This is what they did. It's in verse 26. "We also did them high places and pillars and Asherim on every high hill and on every green tree. And there were also Sodomites in the land, and they did according to all the abominations of the nations which Jehovah drove out before the children of Israel." You know, as I call it, the children of Israel had a choice. Obey God or be influenced by the nations around him. What was God's purpose? What was all this about? He wanted them to be an influence. We mentioned this when we first started. He wanted them to be an influence on the nations around them, about them. What does he want us to do? He wants us to be an influence on the world, doesn't he? But sad to say, most of the time, we lose that battle. And the world becomes a tremendous influence on us. And that's not the way God planned it. You know, God put his house in Jerusalem at that time. But eventually, where's the temple now today? How many times has it been destroyed? Can you go find it now? You can't, because it's been destroyed. And why is that? Because the children of Israel abandoned God and God abandoned them. They broke the covenant. It's sad to say, but let's look at us. Where are we serving now? Where do we serve God? Where do we worship God? In his kingdom. Here on this earth, we worship him in his church, right? That's the dwelling place. That's where God is set up. Christ built the church in Matthew 16. He purchased it with his own blood in Ephesians. He tells us that. So the church is valuable. It has great value. So we need to remember those things that, you know, God's not going to abandon his church. Because who's the head of the church? Jesus is. So let's not forget that. We see some of those things in Hebrews about how God wants us to be. And we see that in several different ways in the book of Hebrews. We're not going to go into that tonight. Next week, we'll look at some of the things. We'll talk about Hebrews a little bit more. I know Sunday we're talking about Hebrews too, but the next week's lesson, we'll cover some of those things. Let's never forget, in chapter 12, God told them to destroy all those asherims, destroy all those things, places of worship where the children in Canaan, the people in Canaan were just doing that abomination of worship. He told them to destroy them. Why? Because he didn't want any kind of influence on them. There was no compromise. God had no compromise. God always demanded fidelity from his people. Just like God set the place of worship, he set the standard for their worship. He set their standard for their life decisions. He tells us what we should do and what we shouldn't do in all circumstances. He did it for the children of Israel, and he has done it for us in his New Testament. We look at the New Testament from our standpoint. The New Testament is all about relationships. It all starts, and we've talked about this with the children of Israel. It started with a relationship, God's relationship with Moses, and we pointed that out. We also talked about God's relationship with the children of Israel, how much he wanted that, how much he needed that. and also how much they needed that. And they destroyed that relationship. So the point of that is we need that relationship too. We need the relationship that Jesus gives us. We need the relationship that God gives us. We need the relationship with them both. And he also mentions, he doesn't forget the fact that we must be holy, or he wants his people to be holy. And he reminds us of that in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 15 and 16. A quote from here, "Be ye holy, for I am holy." We're going to wrap up with our questions now. Any other questions or comments? I just tried to summarize those last few chapters. You know, it's kind of hard because there's a lot of stuff to cover, but I want to make sure you get the idea that there was a purpose in Moses rehearsing all these things for them, especially about the feast, just a reminder of them again, like he's doing about their exit from the children of Israel. This is from chapter 13. Question 10 is from chapter 13. It says, "Can the Israelites believe every prophet that comes along, even if they do signs and wonders?" No, they cannot. Why? Well, what are they to do? They're going to sort of test them, right? I forgot to write that verse down. There's a verse in the New Testament that says, test the spirits. You know, I think it's John, James. Anyway, toward the end. But that's the idea. In other words, they need to test it out. See if what he says comes true. If it doesn't, what do they do to him? What's the punishment? They stone him to death, right? Think God's severe in his punishment? No, he's justice. Even to family members. What if family members try to entice you to serve other gods? What happens there? What are they to do? Are they to follow them? No, they're not to follow them. What are they to do? Take them out and stone them, right? I mean, you know. Your own family? Can't let your own family destroy your relationship with God. That's what he's saying. What was the purpose? Scripture 13 says, what was the purpose of killing false prophets and family members who take you away from God? What was the purpose? What was God's purpose in it? A deterrent? Yeah. I think he says he wants Israel to hear and fear. Hear him and fear him. Not a bad saying. Hear him and fear him. It's a good philosophy of life, right? Hear what God has to say and fear what he can do to you. But remember, the most important thing is what he has done for you. What about the rumors? There's something about rumors. He mentioned something about rumors here in chapter 13. What does it say? You remember? Who wants to read? I think it's verse 14 of chapter 13. Yeah, verse 14 of chapter 13. What does it say. Okay, thank you. But what does he say about rumors? What does he say? Investigate them. And what's the consequences? Death to those who do that, right? Again, same thing. Yeah, the entire city won. You know, I just wonder sometimes when we can get caught up in, well, what's going on with them? Did that so and so? Is that, you know, you see something on Facebook and you jump 30 feet and say, oh, what's going on with that family? You know? Well, don't get caught up in that. Don't get caught up in, I call it investigating sometimes. If you want to know what's happening with some family, call them and ask. Don't call me and say, do you know what's going on? To me, that's the form of gossip, you know. People, as I call it, I see it all the time or hear it all the time. I get called. And I say, you know, I don't know. I said, if you want to know the truth, then call them. I said, I'm not going to participate in any rumors or, you know, gossip or anything like that. I'm just not even going to answer that question because I don't know. You know, I'm not going to try. Well, I'm not. Then go ask, you know, if you want to know. Now, we like to share information, and that's good. And I try to share as much information, you know. When we found out about Tommy Glenn this week, we weren't notified by the family that I'm aware of anyway. But when we found out, we found out Monday morning. We let you know Monday afternoon about what was happening with her. But, you know, that family's probably private, and that's indicated by their circumstances. But that's okay. I don't need to know all the circumstances. Sometimes we don't need to know. What we need to know is if we think there's a brother in trouble or a sister in trouble, we need to let them know. Not, what did you do? How can we help? How can we help get them back on the right road? And I'm sorry, I ran into that this week, and it kind of upset me. But it's basically, it was a rumor, you know. So I know I'm not going to stone the person who talked to me, okay. But the idea is the fact that we have to be cautious. We have to be cautious. And again, what did he say all this was about? So that Israel will hear in fear. I told you that was going to be an important statement. In chapter 40, in there... What is he talking about? Well, the question is, why does God give Israel such specific instructions about eating clean and unclean animals? I kind of hit it at that last week. I don't know, some of you may not have been here. Why does he do that? What's that? To distinguish his people. I think that's exactly right, because we talked about Peter's vision in chapter 10 in Acts, where he told him, you eat, rise, kill, and eat. Peter says, they're unclean. No, they're not unclean because I told you they're not unclean. But here he tells them they're unclean. And I don't know, I'm not a big commentary guy, to be honest with you. I mean, I have a commentary on Deuteronomy specifically, but I read the first three chapters and quit, so to speak. I've got other commentaries on Deuteronomy that I haven't even looked at. To me, the history, the way God is teaching the children of Israel, the history of the Ten Commandments, the history of the plagues of Egypt, he was trying to teach them that those gods that these foreign nations had, that they were not supposed to have anything to do with, were not going to be tolerated under God. And I think that's why he was saying, you know, you want to be different from the rest of the world. You need to be a holy, holy people. And that's one of the things, you know, he was trying to say. That's what the title of this lesson is, not like the nations. And I think that's one of the reasons he was doing this distinction with the animals. Can't prove that. I mean, you know, I'm just telling you, that's my speculation. But it makes sense. It makes sense to understand where God was coming from with all of his rules and regulations. He wanted a separate people. A holy nation, a peculiar, he tells us to be a peculiar people, set apart from the world. You know, he talks about, in chapter 14, he talks about the tithes, and we talked about that a little bit. But he also talks about that sabbatical year. You know, you remember reading about that sabbatical year? That was the year of forgiveness, wasn't it? If you've loaned money to somebody or, you know, that type of thing, like the sabbatical year, you forgive them. What's that? The seventh year, you forgive them. Okay. In other words, they don't owe you anymore. Talking about forgiveness, God was asking Israel to do that. But what had God done for them? Forgiven them time after time after time, hadn't he? And he was just trying to make sure they understood that forgiveness was something not to always be getting, but to be giving. Forgiveness is not something to always be getting, but to be giving. A lot of us have problems with that. A lot of us have problems with that. But that was part of the issue. What about about forgiveness of debt? What was another purpose in that? To help those who are poor. They're going to always be poor people. But if I owe you $1,000 and you forgive me, whew, thanks. You know, okay. We're just throwing that out there. But the idea is the fact that this was part of living under the old law. Was it hard? What if you needed that $1,000 back? You know? What if something circumstances happened to you, then you needed that back? And I couldn't give it back to you in that sabbatical year roll around. You just think, okay. You know, forget the debt's forgiven. Aren't we glad that we serve a great God who's paid a great debt for us and we are forgiven of that debt that we owe? Just think about those things a little bit. I think that's part of what we're learning here as we go through this study in Deuteronomy. Again, we talk about the three feasts. One of the things he emphasizes, where were those three feasts to be observed? Where were they to be observed? We didn't have a name at this point, did we? We didn't have a city. We didn't know. But what does it say about it? Where God chooses. Where God chooses. Where is God chosen for us to worship Him? Here. Right? That's what He's chosen. That's the example in the New Covenant. It wasn't in Jerusalem under the New Covenant, even though it began there on the day of Pentecost. So you see the pattern that He started in the Old Testament that follows into the New Testament that teaches us how He wants to be served, how He wants to be worshiped. Hear Him and fear Him. Those are some things that stuck with me on this lesson. The importance is the fact we need, if we want to have everything well with us, we need to obey God. When He says, so that it may be well with you, you got to obey. And eventually, of course, they didn't, and that's when it became bad for the children of Israel. But you know, the same thing can be said about us. When we stop obeying God, when we stop putting Him first, when we start serving other gods, we lose our perspective. We lose our confidence in God. We become distrustful of what He's giving to us, just like the children of Israel did. They didn't trust God. It was evident from the time they journeyed out of Egypt. They kept saying, "You've just taken us out of here to die in the wilderness." They didn't trust God. Part of that was a lack of, well, in essence, it was a lack of faith. Because the very essence of faith is trust. We have faith in the promises that God has given us. We trust that He's going to deliver those promises. But what's our part on it? We got to obey Him. Just like the children of Israel had to obey God to secure that trust, so do we. They had to obey God to secure the forgiveness, so do we. Those are the lessons we need to remember. That God wants us to be a holy people, a separate people, not anything like the nations of the world. Don't let us ever forget that. Next week, we're going to talk about justice, and it's called True Justice and Righteousness. It'll take finish up chapter 16 through the middle of chapter 21. It's got a lot of good subjects on it. And if you'll pick up your handout, we'll start that next week. Thanks again for your attention.